Good morning. Good to be with you today. If you're visiting with us, we're especially glad that you're here and hope that you will let us get to know you a little bit today. It's been a good weekend for us. If you were not among the crew that was here Friday night, there were 20 of us here playing basketball. And I woke up on Saturday morning realizing that I've not played basketball in a very long time. And I was aching in places I didn't know I had. I went to my son and said, how you feeling today? And he's like, fine. And I thought, I'm not as young as I once was, but it was a good time. Hopefully we will get together again very soon to do that again. But it's a blessing to have a facility where we can do some of those things and get together and just fellowship and have a good time. This morning, we're going to be in Mark chapter 8. Mark chapter 8. Now, like a lot of you probably, I do a lot of my banking online nowadays, and I find it to be simple. I try not to think about all the security things that might be an issue or who's watching or any of that stuff, and just assume that I'm such a small person on the scale, that or at least the financial scale, that that it just doesn't really matter all that much, and no one's really going to be all that interested in the money in my bank account. And so I will go in, and I will set up my usernames and passwords and all of those things. And as I was setting up one account, it gives you the, first of all, it asks you way too many things for passwords, and you have to have symbols and numbers, and I just want a password. And then it asks you for some questions to give answers to that are going to be your security questions. And if you should forget your password, as I've been known to do from time to time, it will ask you things like, what city were you married in? It will ask you things like, where did you go to high school, or what was your mascot? And one of the questions it brought up to ask me was, who in high school was your favorite teacher? And I thought to myself, I've been really blessed to have a lot of good teachers. For a lot of people, that's an automatic thing, and you just immediately go to the one. And I know when I started thinking teacher, before I thought high school, I thought of my third grade teacher, Miss Lucas, who was always one of my favorites, and I don't know exactly why, I just remember really, really liking third grade. And Mrs. Lucas making the classroom a fun place, and I learned a lot. And as I went to high school, I started going through my head with lots of teachers and thought I liked my history teacher in high school, and I liked my English teacher in high school, and went on down the line, and I eventually came in my mind to Mr. Simmons. Now, I will tell you before you try to break into my bank account, this is not the one I used. But Mr. Simmons was my high school chemistry teacher. And he only taught 11th and 12th graders, and he only taught those two classes every day of chemistry and physics. In some years, if there were enough people, there might be two chemistry classes. There were never two physics classes. And everybody thought Mr. Simmons was kind of a legend. And you finally would get to him in 11th grade if you took that. And I remember walking into chemistry for the first day. Now, Mr. Simmons was probably not a whole lot more than 5 feet tall. Little guy, very short haircut, and he was probably in his early 70s at the time. Alvin Simmons and his wife Wanda, they went to our church. He was the church treasurer. And in class, I got to learn more about Mr. Simmons than just that guy that sat on the other side of the auditorium. Mr. Simmons had served on an island in the Pacific in World War II under MacArthur. Mr. Simmons was the first person I'd ever encountered that didn't like MacArthur because the way MacArthur made them work. MacArthur spent a lot of time apparently having them set up the place he would live on the island just the way MacArthur wanted it. Mr. Simmons didn't care for that because it wasn't like the barracks that they lived in. Mr. Simmons had these great stories all the time as he would teach chemistry, and some days you would learn chemistry, and some days you would learn something entirely different from chemistry. The things that vividly I remember about Mr. Simmons is in our class there, we worked at lab tables, and we would be working through our problems and things, and Mr. Simmons, as we worked, would walk around the room, and he would walk behind us, and occasionally you would feel him breathing over your shoulder. And then some days, as he was breathing over your shoulder, watching you work through a problem, he would just start laughing, and it was unnerving as he would laugh. And he would say things like, well, Brian, that's an interesting answer, but I sure hope nobody agrees with you. And I would erase and start over with what I was working on. Or if you forgot to write down the units that this is milliliters or centimeters or whatever it is, he would say, well, that's an interesting number, but are you talking about apples or billy goats or what are you talking about? And he would be reminding you constantly that you got to add the units on there for it to be right. He was one of the funniest guys I ever had as a teacher. One day, he told the story to us, and I didn't get to see it happen, but I wish I would have, of a kid he had in his early years of teaching that thought it would be funny, as he was sitting by the window, to throw his ruler out the window of the school. And Mr. Simmons happened to be looking that way at the moment he did it. And he kept him after school, and when the guy got there to his room after school, Mr. Simmons had a case of rulers. And he planted him by the window for the next hour as he would throw rulers out the window and then have to go outside and retrieve them and put them back in the box and come back inside and start all over again. He never threw a ruler again. Now, the best thing about Mr. Simmons was on his tie bar, and he wore a shirt and tie every day. I never once in my life saw Mr. Simmons not in a shirt and tie. Even the day we got school t-shirts, he put the school t-shirt over the shirt and tie. On his tie bar, it said T-H-I-N-K, think. And he would tell us early on in chemistry, and then again early on in physics for the people that were new, I hope you learn chemistry, I hope you learn physics, but what I want you really to learn in this class is to think. I want you not to just assume everything. I want you not just to take a formula and reproduce that formula. I want you to learn to think for yourself, to see how these things are connected. And I think when we reach Mark chapter 8, this is the point Jesus has reached with his disciples. He has done more amazing things in these first seven chapters than you can imagine. And I think each time as we see the things he does, we're more and more amazed by the way in which he does them, the power in which he does them, the way he is able to speak in such a way that does not allow him to fall into the traps that everybody wants him to fall into. And when he reaches chapter 8, we are faced, I think, with the question, which is what we'll look at this morning, now what? We've seen everything you can do. We've seen the healings. Now what? And so he's going to break the second half of this chapter up into a few things. What he's going to have to deal with, who he is, and then what we and his disciples are going to have to deal with as a result of that if we're going to follow. Starting in verse 27 of chapter 8, Jesus and his disciples went on to the villages around Caesarea Philippi. On the way, he asked them, "Who do people say I am?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Peter answered, "You are the Messiah." Jesus warned them not to tell anyone about him. And I think that's the question we are faced with as we come to believe and come to follow is, who is this guy? And people around us, maybe somebody visiting here this morning, might be thinking, who is this? Who is Jesus? Why is he so important? Why is he so relevant? Can I trust that he is who the Bible teaches that he is? And so as he asks this question to his disciples, they start with the answers that everybody else begins with, which is, well, some say Elijah or a prophet. Those things sound pretty good. There are a lot of other religious groups even today that would look at Jesus and say he was a prophet of God, he was a good man, he did good things, he was a wise teacher. But if all those things are it, then we're kind of killing time here this morning. If he's just another prophet, if he's just a good teacher, if he was just a wise man, for us to come week after week, for us to remember as we did a minute ago, for us to put money into this, for us to put time into this, is all just kind of killing time. Because if he's not who he says he is, then none of the rest of this matters. Which is why he asks the apostles, do you get it? Because what I have in chapters 1 through 7 is people coming to me and they need to be healed, they need to be made whole, they need someone who will touch them for the first time if they're lepers. They need something from me. They all want something. And I don't know who they think I am. Maybe they think I'm just a great healer. Maybe they think I'm just some guy that wants to come and help. But who do you, the ones who have followed me, the ones who have stayed close, who do you say that I am? And Peter is the first one to speak, because that's what Peter does. And he says, "You are the Messiah," or in, as we see in other Gospels, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." This is the foundation on which it's all built. The fact that he is who he says he is. But he continues on. He then began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and after 3 days rise again. He explains to them now the path he's going to have to follow, and that it is not going to be an easy path. And why does he start with this question of who am I before he reaches this point? I think he needs to know, and they need to know who he is, for all of the rest of this to begin to make sense. Because this path he's going to go down doesn't make a whole lot of sense if he's just another guy, if he's just another good man doing good things. And so he tells them what he's going to have to do is going to be difficult and unpleasant and not going to end well from a human standpoint in their minds. And they're not quite sure what to do with that. And so he spoke plainly about this, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Now, I love Peter as I read through the Gospels because a lot of things. I like the fact that he's quick to act. I like the fact that he's quick to speak because it reminds me of myself at times. If I'm not as measured as I need to be, and sometimes I speak before I think or act before I think. But at the same time, I appreciate in him the willingness to do, the willingness to go out there and give it his all. And too many times we are timid from that, and we don't like to do that. I was a music guy in high school, and I was in the chorus and in the band. And they would tell us in the chorus in the band that if you're going to make a mistake, make it loudly. Which, as a trumpet player, Tyler, I was pretty good at. And if the objective behind that and the thought behind that was, if you're going to be timid about it, we never know that it's there and how to fix it. And so let's get it out there. And Peter tends to do that. Now, the interesting thing about Peter here is that as much as Peter is the one to speak quickly and not think sometimes, I love the tact that Peter shows here. And I think it's kind of a sidebar in this story, but something we can learn a lot from. Does Peter go off in front of the crowd and say, "Hang on a second, I don't like what you're saying"? No, Peter pulls him aside. How much could we learn by the pulling aside of someone? Instead of the, "I'm going to have it out with you in front of this crowd of people," instead of the, for those of you who might be on Facebook or something like that, "I'm going to make a bunch of vague posts that you're going to get and everybody else is going to wonder what it is. I'm going to be passive aggressive about this." And he pulls him aside. He pulls him aside and he's not happy and he begins to rebuke. And understand, this is the same one who has just made the confession that you were the Messiah, and now you, as Messiah, "I don't like what you're saying, and so I'm going to rebuke you." Now, we look at that maybe as a combination of bold and stupid. At the same time, although we are not physically pulling Jesus aside in front of us and saying, "Jesus, I don't like this thing that you're saying," how many times in life are we doing that exactly? "God, I don't like the path you have in store for me. God, I don't have faith to go through whatever this is you're about to have me go through." Excuse me. "God, I have a different way in mind. God, this is not okay." And for Peter, I give him at least the credit of, it's not even himself he's concerned about at this point, it's his friend. And we forget sometimes that all these guys all travel around and Jesus is their rabbi. There is a friendship that is building here. And the thought of his friend suffering, he's not very excited about that. So he pulls him aside to rebuke him. And probably not expecting the response he's going to get. When Jesus turned and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter. And he said, "Get behind me, Satan. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns." Now, the trouble with the human concerns is they're the ones that are right in front of us. It's hard to ignore them, isn't it? I was thinking of, as Ken led "It Is Well With My Soul" a little while ago. That song, and a lot of you probably know the story behind that song, and I probably won't get all the details exactly right, but H.G. Spafford, Horatio Spafford, I go by H.G. if I was Horatio too. Horatio Spafford was a guy in Europe back in the 1800s, I believe. He and his family had plans to come to this new country, America, and they wanted to make a life for themselves here. And the only way to get here back then was on a boat. And so he had business to finish there in Europe, sent his family ahead on this boat, to come to America for a new life. And this boat got partway across the Atlantic, and it sank. And he received a telegram from the new world that he was sending his family to, this new country. And the telegram said, "Saved alone." And it was from his wife. Lost his family on that boat coming across. His wife sends the telegram, and he is devastated. And he can't wait to get there and be with his wife. And he himself has to get on a boat and make that same journey. And as he neared, he asked the captain where it happened. And as he neared the place where his children had perished, he wrote the words to that song we sang. "When peace like a river attends my way, though Satan should buffet," with the song, the verse we hardly ever sing, "my sin know the bliss of this glorious thought." And as each of those verses goes through, he comes back to this idea of, regardless of how life is going, it is going to be well with my soul. And it's so easy for us to get caught on the human concerns. And you hear a story like that, and it seems so much bigger than so many of our concerns. But we get caught on those things. And Jesus said, sometimes that's Satan getting in our way. Sometimes that's Satan bringing something to us that we don't want to experience. And yet, Jesus says, "I'm walking this path, and it's going to be okay. This is the plan for where I am to go." Which brings us, I think, to the question of, again, now what? We talk about Christianity oftentimes in terms of the benefits. Because honestly, that's a lot more pleasant, isn't it? I have a lot of friends who do multi-level marketing stuff, and I just try to run the other direction. They always will tell you, and if you're one of these folks, no offense, they always will tell you about the low startup costs, not a lot of commitment, all the life-changing things that will come with it. And I also have a lot of friends who have done those things. They've paid the small amount of money at the beginning, they may have toiled along and didn't seem to be going anywhere, and then everything boomed and their life financially was changed. I've also known people who have done it and it kind of peters out, and then they do another one and kind of goes away. And we always look at the easy part at the beginning, and we want to talk so much about the positives. And Jesus has done just that for 7.5 chapters of Mark. And now he's getting to the part where it's a little more complicated than just that. And I think we need to realize that. We need to have our eyes open about that, that if we are living this life he has called us to live, that sometimes it's not going to be easy. Now, I brought up Mr. Simmons at the beginning for a reason. I got to college, and I took chemistry my first semester of college. I walked into my advisor's office as I was getting ready and pre-registering and all that stuff. He looked at my ACT scores, which is, I think you do SATs up here. It's like the SAT in the South. Excuse me. My ACT score was good. I used to be smart a long time ago. He looked at my ACT scores, and he said, "Oh, well, you need to take this and this and this and this and this." And I remember walking into chemistry the first day and thinking, "Oh, this is great. I'm so excited. I loved chemistry in high school." First 4 weeks, we go through. Everything's clicking. It's good. Get to the test. 96. Still remember it. I was 18 years old. Still remember it. 96. Got the paper on my desk. The chemistry teacher was a really cool guy. He was hysterical. He had actually gone out and had pencils made that say "chemistry is fun" on the pencils. And everybody that got an A on that first test got a "chemistry is fun" pencil. I'm going to guess if I dug through enough boxes, I would probably eventually find the "chemistry is fun" pencil. And I was so excited to get that thing. And then it got to week 5. In week 5 of chemistry, I was taught a concept that I had no understanding of how it worked. And I realized that weeks 1 through 4 of chemistry, that was all Mr. Simmons. Mr. Simmons had taught me enough in that year of high school that it carried me through the first quarter of the first semester. And now it was on me. Jesus is preparing his disciples for that. And I hope we're preparing ourselves for that, which is if we're to go out here and do this Christian walk, at some point it's got to go beyond what has carried us to this point. We have to continue to grow, continue to mature, to continue to get better. And it is the same in every aspect of life, and why would it not be the same here. Tyler has middle schoolers in band, and I'm assuming Tyler hopes that when they're high schoolers in band, they do not sound like they sound in middle school band. The coach, I'm hoping, thinks that a senior should play better than a freshman. Although occasionally you might see those things flipped. In every aspect of life, we see that kind of thing, and in our spiritual walk, it should be the same. If you were the same today as a Christian as you were 10 years ago, you're missing Mark chapter 8, because it gets more difficult. Not to say it's not easy at times, not to say it's not a complete blessing at times, but sometimes it's hard, and we keep working through. So now what? Then he called the crowd along to him, along with his disciples, and said, here's where it gets difficult. And he's going to tell us four things that are going to be difficult about being a Christian. Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. Now, there's a lot in this verse, but I want us to really focus in on denying themselves. We do not live a life in 2017 America that is built around denying ourselves. We live a life in 2017 in America that is about our rights. I have the right to this, I have the right to this, I have the right to this. And if for some reason I don't have those things, then something is wrong and I should now protest that I don't have those things. Or the system should be changed in such a way so that I can get those things. Or maybe I will cheat the system in such a way so I can get those things. Or somebody is not treating me right. Or we should all have everything that we want. And somewhere along the way, we wake up and realize we don't have everything we want. And if we do, there's something new that we want that we didn't have before. Denying ourselves, on the other hand, is about putting other people first. Do you have the things that you need? And I want to make sure you do, instead of worrying about my needs. And what if we all start to operate in that way, denying ourselves? And so he says to them, first of all, this is not going to be a life of wealth and fame for you. It's going to be a life that's difficult at times, and you have to quit worrying about your own needs and start worrying about the needs of others. Now, the cool thing about that is if we're all doing that, what happens? Everybody's needs are taken care of. I think we see that in the early part of the church in Acts chapter 2 and in Acts chapter 4, that they are so concerned about each other that no one is in need. So it starts with denying themselves. He moves on. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me and the gospel will save it. He wants our lives. Now the beauty of it is, the way his life is going to be taken is it's going to be taken away. He's going to give it willingly, but he is actually going to have to lose his life literally for this. He does not ask a path of us that he is not willing to walk himself. Now, what does he want from us? Living sacrifice. It's the way we're going to see it in other places in Scripture. He wants us to live our lives for him. And like we've talked about here and a lot of times before, and probably enough that you get tired of hearing about it, we don't live our lives for him at an hour on Sunday. That's not the only thing. We live our lives for him every day. Deny ourselves, live our lives for him. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet forfeit their soul, or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? It is about a perspective. It's about perspective. Is winning important? Sure it is. Is living in the right way more important? Absolutely. Is being the person God designed you to be the most important thing? Yes, it is. Are we going to have the perspective that says everything is not about bottom line the way it is in America in 2017, but instead it's about life well lived? It's about, am I sharing this news with others? Am I denying myself? Am I living my life for him? There is a perspective here that says all of these things that we tend to work for, although they are important in life, there's something that's more important that's ahead. If anyone is ashamed of me and my words, in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will be ashamed of them when he comes in his Father's glory with the holy angels. And everything is leading to this, which is eternity. If you think that life is important, what's really important is, are we going to represent him well here because it's going to matter for eternity? So now what, again, for us? Well, he loves you enough that he came here knowing all of this before he got to Mark chapter 8. This stuff may have been a surprise to the apostles, although he's alluded to it before, but he knew it all along. He knew that what his life would end in is mockery and beating and crucifixion. But he also knew that his story would not end on that cross. He knew that because of his power, his Father's power, and his being the Messiah, that he would come back. He knew that he would live forever, and he knew that we would have that same opportunity. So this morning, put that at the forefront of our minds. This morning, we have to remember that all of the good and the bad that comes with this life, there's something so much better that is coming ahead. So this morning, if you look at your life and you think, you know, I'm still kind of trudging along the same life I did when I first started to follow, it's time to get better. It's time to do something about that. It's time to take him more seriously. It's time to integrate him into more parts of your life. This morning, if you've never taken him on in baptism, it's a great time to do that. It's a good time to start that eternal walk with him. This morning, if things are difficult for you and it causes you to question God, understand that we knew all along that sometimes things are going to be difficult. I hope that doesn't sound trite. I hope that doesn't make less of it. But we know that sometimes this life is going to be difficult, but that something greater lies ahead. And we also know that because this is going to be difficult, as Jesus is talking about this, he doesn't just tell one person, it's a group of people. He starts with his disciples with the beginning of this difficult news, and then we read in there that he also opens up to the crowd about what they're going to have to do to follow, because he wants the crowd to follow. He wants us to do this together. And if you would like to be a part of a family that is trying to follow him, we would love for you to be a part of it. If there are things we can do to help you, if there's something we can pray about, anything you need to share with your church family, please come while we stand and sing.